anything negative in my life, I've used that as a life lesson, like I said, and learned from it and said, that's not what I'm going to be.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. This week's interview was a lot of fun, and I sat and talked with Cullen Cook about not making excuses and not becoming a product of your environment. Over the past few years, Cullen and I have become friends, and I couldn't believe how much this conversation hit home to me. If you like what you've been hearing on Made Us, take a moment to subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app, rate and review the show in iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever they call it now. Sharing the show with a friend really helps the show grow, and it also helps get these stories like Cullen's out there to people. Now, I can't go any further without talking about this, and it's something I've been meaning to talk about for weeks now. I am proud to say that Made Us is an MBI Studios production, and some of the other MBI Studios productions that you should check out are Hustlin' in Heels, The Root Note, I Am the Storm, Off Duty, and of course, the juggernaut of a podcast, Truth and Justice with Bob Ruff. I can't tell you how proud I am to be part of the MBI Studios family. And I need to put out a couple more thank yous while I'm at it. One, I really need to thank my wife for putting up with me for all the hours that I've been spending on this project. She's been my number one fan and my biggest supporter, and this show wouldn't be possible without her. I also need to thank listener Anita Berger. Anita reached out to me and helped me with a few things to help the show grow. Things that I would have caught on my own eventually, but she really saved me a bunch of time and it's really helped me out a lot. So Anita, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And if you guys want to keep up with us on social media, you can find us at facebook.com/madeuspodcast or on Instagram and Twitter at madeuspodcast. I'm a lot more active on Instagram than Twitter. I still don't know how to use Twitter. And if you have a guest suggestion, reach out to us at madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. So now that I'm through all the formalities and done rambling, please help me welcome Cullen Cook. Cullen, thanks for joining me tonight.
Not a problem, brother.
Appreciate happy to have you here, buddy.
I'm glad to be here.
It's going to be fun.
It will be fun.
We just recently became friends, and it's been fun getting to know you, so I'm happy to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, me too, man. It's been good. What, a little over a year and a half or so?
Something like that,
I'm coming up on finishing my second season of Three Gun, so I met you right at the beginning there.
Yeah, and that's how we met, was shooting Three Gun. So you're a big podcast fan, so this is cool to have you on here.
It is. It's pretty neat. It's cool being in the NBI studios, the Truth and Justice studios, you know.
Yeah, kind of looking around, seeing everything.
Yeah. Just got to meet Bob. It's weird seeing his face while hearing him talk at the same time.
Yeah, it's cool.
But, I just got into podcasts, I don't know, probably about 6 months ago or so, maybe a little bit longer ago than that, and I just, it's just so much better than listening to the stupid radio.
Way
more interesting.
Absolutely. So let's tell all the listeners a little bit about yourself.
My name's Cullen Cook. I'm just kind of a regular old dude that I try to have as much fun as I possibly can in my life. I don't know how to really describe myself except trying to have as much fun as I possibly can. That's about it. You know, I do what I want when I want and live life as best as I can while I'm here.
That's awesome. And I definitely have seen that in you for sure. So I know you've been coming up and you've had a little bit of a rough childhood kind of coming through. So that's why we decided to have you here tonight.
Yep.
Let's cross that bridge a little bit here.
Let's go for it, man.
So you had a rough childhood kind of coming through.
I did. I had, I don't know if it was a rough childhood or challenging childhood. I guess it depends on how you look at it. You know, I chalk everything up to life lessons. Anything negative that has happened in my life, rather than going down a bad path, one of my biggest pet peeves is when people blame something on being a product of their environment. That drives me insane.
I see that a lot too. It really sucks to hear that.
It happens all the time. People are like, I grew up in a broken home or a bad neighborhood. Well, my childhood consisted of my mom was a single mom raising three kids. She did a fantastic job. She did the absolute best she could.
So you have a couple siblings?
Yep, I'm the dreaded middle child.
The middle child.
I've got a younger brother, older sister.
Oh, the middle child always gets shit on.
My sister, my older sister, she is probably one of the nicest, sweetest people in the entire world who's never done anything wrong her entire life. And if she did do something wrong, she ratted herself out and then ratted me out because I was probably the one that talked her into doing something wrong.
Oh, geez.
And then my younger brother, was the baby of the family who could do no wrong. So no matter what he did wrong, he did no wrong.
Yeah.
But me, I was the demon child that
So I was the oldest. I'm the oldest of, well, actually I have a split family. So I have three sisters and a brother, but my parents are divorced. So I have two sisters on one side and a brother and sister on the other, but I am the oldest out of all of them.
Right.
And I definitely got away with a lot of things, actually, even being the oldest. Usually the oldest doesn't get away with things.
Right.
I got away with a lot of things.
Yeah.
It was weird. But my wife's a middle child, and she got shit on a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I wouldn't say I really got shit on that much because, again, my sister didn't do anything wrong, so I was the one that kind of set the bar for screwing shit up, you know? And I was a rowdy, rambunctious kid that just full of energy, you know? And, I mean, my entire life I've been just go, go, go. And I've always had enough of a level head to keep me out of real trouble.
Okay.
But I'm always on that line. You know, I've never actually been in trouble for anything. I've never been arrested or anything like that. I've been detained.
Yeah.
you know? But
yeah, we've all been there.
But even that, you know, I've never really gotten into any real trouble. But again, I seen people my entire life that go over that line, and I just, you know, anything negative in my life, I've used that as a life lesson, like I said, and learned from it and said, that's not what I'm going to be, you know?
Yeah. So and that's a good way to look at it, you know, because too many people make excuses for themselves.
Right.
Kind of make that excuse of like,
right.
Oh, this is all I know. That's all I'm good for.
Yeah.
And it sucks, man. That
drives me insane. And it pisses me off, to be honest with you. You know, it's like I said, my mom was a single mom raising three kids on her own, bouncing from guy to guy,
yeah,
trying to find somebody to help her and help her take care of us. My biological dad was, I mean, frankly, just 100% piece of shit.
Oh, really?
Alcoholic, drug addict, like hardcore drugs, like injecting drugs.
Oh, geez.
And just terrible. Like, I'm 44, and my entire life I've gotten, I'd say maybe 10 birthday and or Christmas cards or presents from him my entire life.
Holy shit, man.
And what's so odd is, like, his parents, my grandparents, are like, they were great people.
Yeah.
Angels, you know, and he was just a piece of shit.
And do you have a lot of contact with your grandparents on that side?
Well, I did, but they're passed away now. Okay. But yeah, I spent every single weekend with my grandparents.
Nice.
And my grandpa kind of raised me, like he was my father figure.
Okay.
When I didn't have a father figure. Because, like I said, my mom bounced from guy to guy to guy. And these guys, like, some of my fondest childhood memories are watching my mom get beaten by guys.
Jesus Christ.
Or these guys beating us, you know,
and
it was just fucked up shit, you know, and
that's craziness, man.
Yeah, but it, like I said, I learned from it. Like the only thing that my biological dad ever did for me was gave me motivation to be nothing like him.
Yeah.
So the absolute opposite from him. That being said, I've never experimented with drugs. Like I've smoked weed, and that's it. And I smoked weed for like one summer, and didn't like it.
That sounds like just about everybody.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I was probably 19 and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get high. And I smoked weed that summer with a bunch of my friends. I never bought it, never spent my money on it. I just smoked theirs and I didn't like it. You know, I don't like the smell of it, don't like the taste of it. It makes me thirsty, makes me feel lazy.
It is weird, you know. So the same deal. I've tried it. I smoked it, like you said, maybe one year I smoked it with friends.
Yeah.
And it was never something for me. I didn't like the way it made me feel.
Right.
You know, I don't like the smell of smoke anyways. I don't like cigarette smoke. I don't like weed smoke. I don't like any smoke.
Right.
But I didn't like the way it made me feel.
Yeah.
I felt out of control. I'm a big control freak.
Right.
Anyways, so it always felt weird. So I definitely never tried anything harder than that because
right.
I didn't like weed. And weed's right. like the safest thing.
Right. Right. Like there's a point, like when you would smoke weed and get high, there's like a maybe a 5 or 10 minute period for me where I'd be giggly and it's like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
And then I'd feel like shit. I'd either be lazy or it'd make me sick. And I don't know if it was like probably half the time I smoked that I was drinking too.
Yeah.
But I just never tried anything else. And then like even drinking, because my dad was an alcoholic, I drink. I enjoy drinking. I have a good time drinking. But if I ever, any time in my life where I felt like I was maybe pushing the edge or drinking too much, I'll stop drinking for a month or 2 months or whatever just to make sure I'm good.
Yeah.
And I've never had an issue with it, and I can always stop. you know, but
that's good. And that's good to be able to tell that in yourself. You know, I have a very, I've learned this with myself. I have a very addictive personality. So I always worry about things. Like I'm a person that like gets on something and it's over.
Yeah.
Like I need to do it. You know, tattooing was that way. When I started tattooing, it was like all I thought about was tattooing.
Right.
That's all I did. I traveled, I tattooed. That's all I wanted to do. And then when I started shooting,
right.
I shot. I mean, I shot 50,000 rounds a year for the last 4 years.
Right.
And that's just who I am. So I've always known that like I need to be careful when it comes to that stuff. You know, I worry about gambling. I used to gamble a lot, and that was a thing that I was like, I really need to be careful with this because I know that this is going to be a problem.
Right.
And the same thing with like drugs or alcohol. Like I know that I have to be careful because I know it can be a problem.
Right. See, I don't know if I would say that's an addictive personality. I guess kind of, but me, when I think of an addictive personality, I think of substance abuse, like drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, whatever. But I'm kind of there with you with that. Now, with the shooting thing, you're way more, I guess, addicted to it than I am. Like, I love shooting.
Yeah.
But I don't, like I told you earlier, I don't practice. You know, I practice on the range. I don't do the dry fire, which I know I should. If I actually did that all that dry fire training and all that practice that you do, I might be half-assed decent at it. But I love shooting, so I love going to the range and shooting and practicing that way.
Yeah.
But running around my basement and dry fire, it's just, I'm like, eh. Once in a great while, I'll force myself to do it. But I don't really see, and I guess in my mind, that's not an addictive personality thing. To me, I don't have an addictive personality. I used to smoke cigarettes. I smoked cigarettes from the time I was 12. Well, I guess I started dabbling with smoking cigarettes when I was 12. I probably became a full-time smoker at 16, and I smoked till I was 32.
Okay.
And at 32, it was February 10th, when I was 32 years old, I was coming home from Indianapolis. I smoked, I did the cliche thing. I finished my cigarette. I was like, you know what? I'm done. I threw it out the window, threw the rest of the pack out the window. I haven't touched them since.
Nice.
So I have a strong will when I decide I want to do something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I am with shooting or anything like that. Anything that looks fun, I want to do. You know, I probably 15 years ago, I was like, you know what? It'd be cool to fly a plane. So I went and took a pilot lesson, flew a plane from South Bend to La Porte and back.
No shit.
Just so I could fly a plane.
Holy cow, dude.
Yeah. I went to the local pilot club, said, hey, I want to fly a plane. They're like, all right. It cost me like $80. I sat down, spent about 15 minutes in the classroom. He took me out, walked me around the plane, showed me a bunch of stuff. He's like, start it up. I was like, all right. I started up. He's like, go. And I was like, huh? He said, go. I was like, all right.
They let you fly a plane that quickly?
Fuck yeah, dude. The only thing I didn't get to do was land it. But I taxied down the runway, which was way harder than it seemed. Because you steer it when you're on the ground, you steer a plane with your feet pedals, like kind of like a bobcat or something.
Okay.
So I'm going down the runway, and the plane naturally pulls, I want to say to the left. I can't remember because it was a while back. But it naturally pulls one way due to the rotation of the propeller.
Okay.
So
makes sense.
I kept trying to turn the fucking wheel to straighten it out, and it doesn't do anything. So finally, I just had to let go of the steering wheel part of it and steer it with my feet. And yeah, flew to La Porte and back, and it was awesome. And I've always been like that. I trained and fought MMA back in like 07. It was one of those things where I was like, that'd be fun. So I went and trained for 2 months, jumped in a cage and fought.
Holy and shit, dude. That's awesome.
32 years old. Had my first MMA fight.
I'm not an MMA fan, but this past weekend, and so when this comes out, it'll be about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
There was the big fight over the weekend in Vegas.
Right.
I could give a shit about any of the fights. Did you see, what's his name? Derek Lewis?
The big black dude?
The big black dude.
Yes.
Did you see his post-fight interview?
Yeah.
That is the
my balls
funniest.
Are sweaty.
That is the funniest thing I've seen. That is my new favorite fighter. I don't even like MMA. That's my new favorite fighter.
Oh, I love MMA.
Did you see the whole interview?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. He's like, Donald Trump called me.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my God.
He's like, Joe Rogan, next week I'm coming on your podcast smoking weed with you. That dude cracked me up.
That was the best.
But again, that's the thing is like, you know, I live life to the fullest. I try to live life to the fullest.
Yeah.
So if something looks fun, I want to do it. I'm like, I want to fly a plane. I used to race motocross. I was like, I want to do a cage fight. I did a freaking cage fight. And I trained for 2 months, got in the cage. When that cage door slammed shut, that was one of the coolest things I've ever done in my entire life. And I knocked the guy out in a minute and 30 seconds of the first round. So I did one fight. I wanted to do more, but like I fractured my hand in that fight. No big deal. It didn't really stop me from work, but I'm like, dude, I'm 32 years old. I got paid $100 to do this fight.
Yeah.
And it was fun as shit. And I retired undefeated.
Bam.
So,
done.
So boom. I'm an undefeated MMA fighter. You know what I'm saying? So
that's awesome.
And three gun, you know, like I always wanted to shoot three gun. Like once I seen what three gun was, I was like, man, that would be badass. But I had no idea where to do it.
Yeah.
And then I'm on Facebook and I seen pictures that Stacy posted. I'm like, dude, you shoot three gun? He's like, yeah, I'm the match director at Bend of the River.
And Stacy Weston is a friend of ours.
Yes. And so I hit him up, and before I even shot my first three gun match, I was part of your guys' three gun crew.
Yeah.
And I did it and I fell in love with it. So I've always been like that because I, don't get me wrong. I had a good childhood mixed with a bad childhood. I feel like I'm kind of bouncing all over the place, but I don't really give a shit. So, back to the childhood thing, you know, I grew up, like I said, my mom was a single mom, bouncing from guy to guy to guy. So it'd be one guy that get drunk and beat my mom up, or we lived with one guy for a while that had a big wooden paddle that just looked for any reason to whoop us kids with it. And then one guy my mom was with, I remember they got in a fight and she put us kids in the car. And this is literally one of my most vivid memories. And I was probably 4 or 5 years old because we moved to Florida when I was like 5. And this was before we moved to Florida. So I remember him beating my mom up, her throwing us kids in the car. We left. We're driving down the road, come around the corner. And I remember seeing this guy run out between the houses, out in the middle of the road, run up the hood of the car and stomp his foot through the windshield, run over the top of the car, jump off the back. And that, like, that's the shit that I grew up with, you know, and seeing that. So all these people like that made me, it motivated me to never be anything like that.
Yeah.
I would never put my hands on a woman because I grew up seeing that.
Yeah.
So when you get these people that say that they're a product of their environment, that pisses me off because no, you're not. Yeah, it's everything is your decisions, you know, and it's the decisions that you make in life. You see something and you can say, you know what, I'm going to be just like that, or I'm going to be the absolute fucking opposite of that.
Yeah.
And that's what I've always chosen to do, is be the absolute opposite of the bad shit. My dad, my brothers, me and my sister have the same dad, and then my brother has a different dad. And he was a piece of shit too, you know, and then all these other guys, and then...
People are just attracted to that. It's weird.
I don't know if my mom was attracted to it or if she was just so desperate to find somebody to help her raise three kids. You know, I don't know. But she literally did the best she could. And at one point we were living in Florida. We ended up homeless and living in a van on the beach for probably 3 months or so, is what she said. And
you said you were about 5 when you moved to Florida?
I lived in Florida from the time I was 5 till I was 9. When I was 9, we moved back up here. Somewhere around there. So 4 or 5 years in Florida.
Okay.
And for 3 months, we were homeless, lived in a van on the beach. Now, Jesus me being Christ, a kid, man. I thought that was cool as shit. I'm like, we live at the beach. You know, I mean, they got showers. You know, we go swimming every day. Now, for my mom, you know, she's freaking out. You know, what the fuck am I going to do? I got 3 kids, were homeless, living in a van. But she always, you know, she never gave her kids up. We were always with her, and she did the best she could. And, you know, we lived on welfare and all that shit, you know, food stamps. And I remember standing in line, get the government cheese and the government butter and all that stuff. And,
yeah.
I mean, it is what it is, you know, but.
You know, it's weird when you're younger, you don't really understand that you're poor.
Right.
You know, and a lot of kids don't understand they're poor. And like you said, you know, you being homeless, living on the beach at that age, you're like, this is fucking cool.
Yeah. Like, I'm at the beach every day.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't really put it together, you know, and that's definitely, I saw a lot of that living, you know, when I was younger, we lived with my grandparents and it just seemed normal. Yeah. You know, I didn't realize that my mom didn't have any money.
Right.
Like we just lived with my grandparents. I thought everybody lived with their grandparents.
Yep.
You don't, as a kid, you don't realize that.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine that stress that as a parent now.
Right.
Doing that.
Right. We did the same thing. When we moved back here from Florida, we moved in with my grandma, my mom's mom, and lived with her. And I didn't think nothing of it.
Yeah.
And then my mom got with the guy that I considered my dad for the first, I don't know, half of my life or whatever. Great guy. Absolutely. Like, he is, to this day, he is my dad, or was my dad.
Okay.
So when I was about 9-ish, somewhere in that area, him and my mom got together. Now, I knew him my entire life because he was one of my biological dad's friends. Okay. So he was always around and this and that. And we called him Uncle Jake. His name was Denny, but his nickname was Jake.
What the fuck?
His last name was Jacobs. Okay. So like, everybody, how the fuck? Yeah, everybody called him Jake. So he was Uncle Jake. Well, you know, years had went by, my mom and my dad divorced and this and that. And when my mom and my real dad were together, you know, like, my mom would be home with me and my sisters before my brother was born. And she would need diapers or food or milk or whatever. And my dad would be off getting all fucked up and whatever, don't care, you know. Yeah. So Uncle Jake would bring it, you know. And he was just, you know, he was friends with my mom and my dad both, and him and my mom stayed in touch. So when I, like I said, when I was somewhere around 9, they ended up getting together, and one of the greatest men in the world, just a great guy. And then when I was 12, 13, something like that, he died of leukemia.
Oh, wow.
He used to work on barges down in like Louisiana, Texas area or something like that.
Okay. Off the Gulf Coast.
Right. Right. And they would haul a chemical called benzene. And benzene is a very, very harmful chemical.
Oh, geez.
And they would, the workers would get in these barges and sit there and scrub them out with no protective gear. They'd be in like cut off jean shorts, no shirt on, this and that. And pretty much everybody that worked on those barges with him all died of leukemia.
Really? And you said it was benzene? I've never heard of that before.
Benzene, it's one of the chemical components of gasoline.
Okay.
At 12 or 13 years old, I watched this man that was like my hero, that was like Superman, become like a frail little, you know, bald because he lost all his hair from chemotherapy and all this. And I watched him die. And just like, man, you know, like, my mom finally gets a good guy.
Yeah.
And then God takes him away. You know, like, what the fuck?
Today's episode is brought to you by American Made Muscle Company. American Made Muscle Company has done it again. And if you don't know about American Made Muscle Company, they are a premium fitness and lifestyle brand focusing on our love for living the healthiest life possible and for our love of the country. They offer vintage Americana-inspired designs that are hand-printed on soft, high-quality material. These t-shirts are the softest t-shirts I own, and I have a closet full. Matter of fact, I'm wearing one right now as I record. And for my listeners and my listeners alone, American Made Muscle Company has a special offer. They're offering 25% off your entire order. All you need to do is go to AmericanMadeMuscleCompany.com and use code MADEUS at checkout and save 25%. That's code MADEUS, M-A-D-E-U-S, all one word at checkout, and save 25% on your entire order. So what are you waiting for? Pause this podcast right now. Go to AmericanMadeMuscleCompany.com. Check out the awesome selection of tees they have and buy one today. Use code MADEUS at checkout and save 25%. Again, that's AmericanMadeMuscleCompany.com. Code MADEUS.
So this is where it gets really weird too. So when my dad was dying, he... my mom's probably going to be pissed if she hears this, but I don't really care. Love you, Mom. So when my dad was dying, he told his brother, he's like, take care of Donna and the kids. Make sure that they're good. Just watch over them.
Yeah.
So after my dad died, then my Uncle Chuck would come around all the time and just make sure we were good and this and that, and make sure she had everything you needed, and make sure the kids were good and all this and that. And so, let's see, he died when I was 12 or 13, and then probably 2 or 3 years later, in the midst of that, Chuck and his wife ended up going through a divorce, and then him and my mom ended up getting together. So this is kind of the weird part. So she ends up marrying her husband's brother.
Yeah.
But he raised me the second half of my life.
Okay.
So these two guys are kind of what made me who I am. They were the... the father figure between them and my grandpa. They were the father figures that I needed, that were stable, that taught me how to be a man.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like they kept me in check, put me in my place, you know. And like I said, I've always been a rambunctious kid. I was wild. I was hyper. Shit, schoolyard fight since I was 5-6 years old.
Oh,
and
geez,
just,
man.
I mean, just go all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and they guided me, you know, and they literally taught me how to be a man. So then, my mom and Chuck were together for, I don't know. Let's see. I think they got divorced when I was probably 21, 22, something like that.
Gotcha.
When they got divorced.
So that's a big span of your childhood.
Right. Right. But when they got divorced, it was one of those deals where they just realized that they were better friends than they were companions or lovers or whatever the hell you want to call it. So they got divorced, but like stayed best friends.
Okay.
So my mom ended up getting remarried to the guy that she's with now. Great guy. So after my mom and Chuck got divorced, they stayed like best friends. So at Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that, he was still there.
Okay.
Him and my mom's husband now got along, became friends and everything. It was kind of weird, but it was great because that's, it was like they were divorced, but he was still at all the family functions.
Yeah, that's pretty weird.
Yeah.
For sure that's weird.
Yeah, it is, but it was weird, but it was great, you know, because like they were divorced, but still Christmas and Thanksgiving and all that, you know, they were both there. He was still there, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I was I want to say 25, 26, he died of a heart attack.
Holy cow.
And it was one of those deals where he was supposed to come over for dinner, like over to my mom's house. I think we were all supposed to have dinner at my mom's house or something like that. And he didn't show up and we didn't think nothing of it. And nobody heard from him for a couple of days. And then my mom and her husband, Ron, went to check on him and found him dead on his living room floor.
Man, and that's crazy.
It is.
You have not done well with father figures.
No, But the two father figures that I had in the short time that I had them were fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, they were two of the best men you'd ever meet in your life, man. And just amazing. And just good dudes, you know?
Yeah.
So complete opposite of what my real dad was and all these other piece of shits were.
Do you have any contact with your biological father still?
No. He died, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, something like that.
Gotcha.
But I didn't talk to him for probably 10 years before he died.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, you need to make amends and forgive him and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what's the point? You know, he has never been there for me. So at one point he showed up at my house. He was like, I want to be a part of your life and this and that, blah, 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 blah. This was between his drug binges, you know. He was such a bad drug addict that when my grandparents passed away, my grandpa passed away first. My grandpa wasn't a rich man, but he did well.
Okay.
You know, he had a good nest egg. He was the president of the South Bend Credit Bureau. He was financially, he was smart.
Yeah.
His house was paid off. They had a bunch of, you know, they had a fair amount of life insurance policies and this and that. So my grandpa passed away. Then when my grandma was sick, my dad was already a drug addict, taught my grandma into changing the will because it was supposed to be split three ways between me, my sister, and my dad.
Okay.
And he convinced my grandma that me and my sister were too young to manage that kind of money. So everything went to him. And within 6 to 8 months, everything was gone. Their life insurance policies, my grandpa's life savings, their house that was paid off for 30 years or something like that.
Oh, man.
Everything's gone.
That's unbelievable.
So it blows my mind.
Yeah, that's absolutely unbelievable.
But he was fueling him and all his buddies' drug habits, you know? So they're like, oh, party time. You know, I'm rich, bitch. You know, that kind of stuff, you know?
Man.
And just literally pissed away my grandfather's entire life savings.
Yeah.
So he shows up at my doorstep. Well, let me back up a little bit. So when I was probably 25, he decides he wants to get off drugs. So my sister is like, you know, she's like, screw him. You know, I'm not having anything to do with it. I'm like, let's give him a chance. You know, let's help him any way we can, this and that. So between me, my sister, and his wife, we helped him get off drugs, and people had to babysit him kind of around the clock. It was like the shit you see in the movies,
yeah.
You know, shaking and puking and detoxing or whatever they call it, you know? So he got clean. He was clean for a couple months and then disappeared and left to Texas, moved to Texas.
Oh, geez.
And right back into drugs and alcohol and this and that.
That's crazy, man. Did your sister have much contact with him before all of this?
No, my sister wanted nothing to do with him.
Okay.
So at that point, I was more willing to have something to do with him.
Yeah, and then, you were just like, fuck him too. So
right. Then after that, then he tries coming back in our lives again. Well, at this point, my sister is wanting to give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt, and let's help him out. And I'm like, fuck him, you know?
Yeah.
So he shows up on my doorstep one day just out of the blue, and he's like, I want to be a part of your life. And I'm like, fuck you, you know, you've never been a part of my life. What are you going to benefit me now?
Yeah,
you know, I'm in my mid-20s now. How are you going to benefit me at all? You know, I said, you want to be a part of my life, you've got two grandkids, because my sister at that time has, well, she still has two kids, but she she had the two kids at that point. And I'm like, you have two grandkids, show them what it's like to have a fucking grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, be there for them. Don't miss a birthday. Don't miss a Christmas. You know, you prove to me that you can be a part of their life, mm-hmm. and then maybe I'll let you be a part of my life.
Yeah, you've already fucked me over, but don't fuck these kids over.
Right, right. So I think he got them both like a birthday card.
Yeah.
And that was it. So then fast forward, I don't know, 10 years or something like that. And people are like, oh, your dad's dying. You know, he's sick and he's going to die anytime and you should go see him. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like, fuck him. You know, like, why should I go see him now? Like, that's like saying, hey, you remember the dude that lived down the road from you when you were a kid that you didn't really talk to, but you'd see him driving around every now and then? Like, yeah. He's dying. You should go to the hospital and visit him. Why?
You know? Like, I had obviously it's not nearly to the same effect, but I had an uncle like that. I had an uncle that passed away maybe 5 years ago from cancer. The dude has been gone my entire life.
Right.
I've seen the guy one time, and I was maybe three. The only reason I know I've seen him is I've seen pictures.
Right.
When he was getting, you know, he was really sick, was not doing well. My grandparents went down to see him. My grandparents hadn't talked to him in 20 years, right. 25 years, something right. like that. Hadn't even talked to him. And they went down to see him because he contacted them because he was going to die, and he knew it.
Right.
And they came home and showed us pictures of this guy. And it was just like you said. It was like they showed me a picture of my grandparents standing with some guy down the road that I don't know who he is.
Right.
If that guy passed me in the street, I wouldn't know who he was.
Right.
And I felt bad, but I felt bad for my grandparents. I didn't feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that guy.
See, luckily my grandparents were already dead. So.
So I get what you're saying about, like, it's a stranger.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's sad that a stranger, you know what I mean? Like, you're not happy a stranger dies, but right. at the
you
same point.
You don't really want to see anybody die, but it doesn't affect me at all.
Yeah.
Like you brought zero benefit to my life. So why in the fuck would I waste my time, take time off work or whatever, and go to your funeral?
Yeah.
And watch people cry about you when I know that you're a piece of shit your entire life.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that's, again, obviously not to take away from that, but the same thing with my uncle.
Right.
You know, I've been in several tattoo magazines. I had a big international tattoo magazine that did like a 13-page article on me, which was really cool.
I did not know that.
And my grandparents took it down and showed him. And he's like, oh, I didn't know I had a nephew that was this talented. And right. they told me that, and my first thought was, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me? You right. didn't fucking try. So, like, I 100% get what you're yeah. saying. Now, granted, it wasn't my sperm donor, but...
But it's still family.
Yeah.
Well, alleged family or alleged, whatever. Yeah.
yeah.
However the fuck you want to say it. It's like, people say that, you know, blood is family and this and that, blah, blah, blah. I got friends that are way more family than what my dad ever was. You know, that's one of the things that, like, right now, what I've learned from all that shit is I try and surround myself with the best people I possibly can. You look at my group of friends from an outside point, if you stood around and watched us talk to each other, you'd be like, man, these motherfuckers hate each other because we constantly rip on it. It's just nonstop.
Yeah.
Talking shit to each other. But I love my friends more than anything. You know, I feel like when you die on your deathbed, if you can look back on your life and say, you know what? My entire life, I've had five really good friends that are true friends that I can count on for anything. then I've lived a successful life.
Absolutely.
And I've got easily way more than five of them.
Yeah.
Now, I also know a shitload of people, and a lot of them I kind of call friends. I call them friends, but they're like, they're friends or acquaintances or whatever. But like my core group, man, you can't break us up. Yeah. You know, one of my best friends in the world lives in Missouri. Like if I called him right now, he's like, dude, I fucking need you right now. He would jump on a plane or jump in his truck and drive here right now.
Yeah.
There's another one of my best friends lives in Grange. There's basically like me, Randy, and Brian. We're like the three of us are tight as hell. You know, just like they're my two best friends in the world. I got another buddy, Dan, that Dan's more of a brother than a friend. Like we, you know, kind of grew up together, lived together. His mom, when they were down and out, they lived with us and in our family. So Dan is more of a brother than a friend. Me and Dan talk all the time, don't hang out that much. Me and Brian and Randy are together, even though Brian lives in Missouri.
Yeah.
Like we talk damn near every fucking day. Brian and I always make a point to take a trip somewhere in the wintertime, just random shit. Like last year we did a random ass road trip. I was flying down there for a Chiefs fan, go Chiefs. And
Jesus.
Yeah, I was flying down there for a Chiefs game, and he was coming up here for his nephew's football game, and it was like 2 weeks apart. So he come up here, and then he's like, man, instead of flying down, I'll stay a couple days longer. You leave a couple days early, and we'll fucking road trip down.
Nice.
And then you fly back. So I was like, bet. So we took a random road trip. We went to Nashville, hit Nashville, partied in Nashville for a couple days, and then just literally drove back roads back to his house through little podunk-ass towns and just had a blast, man, and just drove all over, you know, from Indiana through Kentucky and Tennessee and Missouri and all over Missouri. And we went and jumped in a helicopter and flew in a fucking helicopter over Lake of the Ozarks to see Lake of the Ozarks.
Nice.
Went and rented a pontoon boat on Table Rock Lake and just went out, you know, just random fly by the seat of your pants type of shit.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Randy, he doesn't get to be a part of all that. He's got a wife and two kids and this and that, you know, which Brian has a wife and three kids, but since Brian moved away so many years ago, his wife Paige she's a freaking saint because she puts up with his stupid ass. But
I hope he listens.
Oh, he'll listen to this. Yeah. Fuck you, Ginger. That's the other thing. He used to be a little skinny, scrawny ginger. Now he's a little fat ginger.
Nice.
But he's a ginger, so that's disgusting already. And
my guest last week on last week's episode is a ginger. We made fun of that on there too. I called him a leprechaun.
Yeah. Did that one come out yet?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I was listening.
As of the date of recording, it has not come out yet.
I was listening to another podcast where people were making fun of gingers.
Yeah.
So Randy is short, receding hairline. He's German, 100% German, so he's dark complected, but we call him Mexican. So we call him our short, bald Mexican friend.
Oh, my God.
So for his birthday, my brother-in-law owns a sign shop, Signs Unlimited. Check it out. That's my little cheap plug. But I had him make me a big deportation sign. So I presented that to Randy that he was getting deported for being an illegal alien. And
I have a quick funny story about that too.
Go for it.
So episode 6, TJ Lucas.
Yep.
He's a good friend of mine. Yep. He is Cuban. And we have a big sign in the shop that says Welcome to Little Havana that he made.
Right.
And we also have a sign that we put up on his days off that says been deported.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I listened to that episode, and when I was listening to that, TJ moved around a lot as a kid too, yeah. Right? I believe he and I went to like the same amount of schools. I went to 9 different elementary schools.
Oh, geez.
2 different junior high schools and 3 different high schools.
Holy cow, man.
So 14 different schools in my school career. My sister didn't do great at that.
Yeah.
Me, you can throw me in the middle of anything and I'm going to fucking make friends. I will talk to anybody and everybody. Just a couple weeks ago, me and Randy turned 40. So for the short, bald Mexican's 40th birthday party, we took 26 people to Nashville.
Oh, geez.
And we went down to Nashville and we partied. And you put like me and Randy and Brian in any situation and we're going to make friends. You throw us in the middle of a bar or the middle of a group of anybody and I will talk to anybody. Like I said, I try and have as much fun and enjoy life as much as I can. And we like at one point we walked into one of the bars and we'll walk through bars and just start, whether it be a bar or a beach or wherever people are at, I will walk through and just start high-fiving people. I mean, you've seen me on the gun range.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not the best shooter in the world, but I make my presence known and people will fucking remember me.
Yeah, you know? Sure. Everybody loves you, man.
Like, I have fun, you know? I'm sure a lot of people don't like me, but I don't really give a shit. If somebody doesn't like me, I don't care. I don't care what other people think about me.
Yeah.
So we're in Nashville a couple of weeks ago. We walk into a bar, and there's probably 15 people sitting on bar stools, just kind of back up against the wall. And they got their drink in their hand. They're watching the band. Their head's bobbing, you know. And I walk in. I see all these people, and I'm like, we're high-fiving. We're high-fiving. I walked down and just high-fived every single one of them, and their entire demeanor changed.
Yeah.
They went from nodding their head, kind of, you know, not really frowning, but just to smiling and laughing and having a good time. And it wasn't just for that brief second where I high-fived them. It literally changed their entire mood the whole time we were in that bar.
Yeah, it's amazing how that'll happen.
It's crazy. And people just, you know, they sit there and they're like, you know, oh, yeah, this is cool. I'm watching the band. But fucking embrace it, man. Have fun.
Yeah, like, for sure.
On the gun range, you see me and Kenny and Kenny Hunt. He's another good friend of mine. And you know, we shoot together all the time. And me and Kenny squad up. And I had somebody come up to us after one of the matches a couple weeks ago. And they're like, dude, I think it was Chris Haver, maybe. I don't remember who it was. But it was somebody, they come up to us after the match and they were like, dude, I was jealous I wasn't on your squad. Like every time one of you guys would shoot, it sounded like you just won the whole match because everybody's fucking hooting and hollering and, you know, having a good time. And that's just how we roll, you know. It's like there's so many people that are negative or sad or mopey or whatever. And like, don't fucking let that happen, man. Like, and don't get me wrong. I have my times where I'm down and out or bummed out or probably even been depressed at a time or two, but people let that get to them, man. Don't let it get to you.
Yeah,
you
know? For
like,
sure.
Like fucking roll with the punches, man. Bob and weave and smile and have fun. Be stupid, act goofy, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't stand seeing people have a bad time.
No, I get it, man. And honestly, I that's been the perfect theme of this show. Like you said, you know, don't allow something else to bring you down.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And don't get me wrong. I allow shit to bring me down, but
it's all about fighting back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm my own worst critic. We were talking about that earlier before the podcast and stuff. I am my own worst critic. If I try something and screw, I have this bad problem where I feel like everything that I try, I'm going to be great at.
Yeah.
And I'm usually pretty decent most things I try, but I expect to be great at everything I try. First time out, I'm like, oh, I'm fucking winning this shit. You know, so I've been shooting 3-gun a little over a year and a half. I do okay. I have fun with it. That's 100% for sure. I have fun with it. But I go out and like if I squad with you, I'm like, fucking Zach just did better than me. That's bullshit, you know? Well, you practice all the time. You've been shooting for a long time. I'm a year and a half into it.
Yeah, it's hard.
And I expect to be going out and beating everybody. And then when I don't, I'm pissed off. And I'm like, this is bullshit, you know? Like why did I fuck this up? Why did I do that? Why did I do that? Well, dumbass, because you've been shooting less than two. Well, I've been shooting for a long time. But shooting with people that know what they're doing and actually instruct you and shooting competition are way two way different
things. Oh, for sure.
So it's one of those deals where, you know, I screw something up and I'm like, oh, this is bullshit. But I still don't let it get me down for a little while.
Yeah.
I've definitely destroyed some matches because I get in my own head and I'm like, oh, son of a bitch. But at the end of the day, I have fun. And I try and have as much fun as I possibly can, man. You're only here one time and you're never promised tomorrow. You never know how long you're going to be here. Fucking enjoy life, man. You know, and it pisses me off when I see people that don't. It breaks my heart when you see people that, like, take their own life. And you know, it's like,
yeah, that's
like,
hard.
Don't let that get to you. Like, how in the fuck can life be so bad, man? I've had some close people that took their own life. And it's like, what? Like, you had the world by the balls. And you let something get you down? Like, why?
Yeah.
You know, what the fuck?
Just take it and run with it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, roll with the punches, bob and weave, man, and move on. Chalk it up to life lessons.
Cullen, I think you've really hit on some stuff here.
Yep.
To close out the show, I'm going to ask you the question I ask everybody.
All right.
If you had something to tell somebody right now to help them through whatever it may be, some struggles, what would you tell them?
Boy, this could be a long one. Live life to the fullest, man. Don't let shit get you down. Have as much fun as you possibly can and try your damnedest to live your life. I have three words that are very, very important to me that I think that if everybody took these three words and lived their life by these, the whole world would be a better place. And that's honesty, loyalty, and integrity. Be honest. Don't get me wrong. I don't do this all the time, but I fucking try my damnedest. Be honest with everybody and be honest with yourself. Being honest with yourself is hard.
It is hard.
That is very, very hard. Being honest with other people is hard, but being honest with yourself is way worse. Be loyal, man. Be loyal to anybody and everybody that, like, whether it be family or friends, be fucking loyal. I can't stand backstabbers, liars, cheaters, shit like that. I hate that. And then live life with integrity, man. If you ask somebody to define integrity, they'll kind of stumble, oh, blah, 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 blah. And I heard somebody say the easiest way to define integrity is doing the right thing when nobody else is looking.
That's awesome.
And again, I don't always live life honesty, loyalty, integrity, but I fucking try, man. So everybody do your best. Try and do that, man. Just remember those three words, honesty, loyalty, integrity, and try that.
Cullen, thank you for joining me, man.
Hey. My pleasure, man. It was fun.